Oh man, I love this song. Every time I hear it, I can remember where I was and who I was with. It reminds me of this. Does this sound familiar? Music is like a scent. It can instantly transport you to another time and place. I ask my guests to dish about their song with the memories that go with it. I'm your host, Tiffany Mason. I have a passion for music and a curiosity about how a song affects someone and why. Turn up your radio and let's explore Memories with a Beat. Hello, Podcast Land. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Memories with a Beat. And today I have Jay Franzi with me, and I'm really excited. I've seen him posting a little bit about his podcast. And honestly, Jay, you are one of the first people that, like, once you said you wanted to be on the podcast, you found me on social media and started following me. And so it's kind of nice to be able to see, you know, what the person I'm going to be talking to is interested in or what they currently do, because I don't normally get that liberty. So that was really nice. I appreciate that, Jay.
Well, it is my pleasure. And thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this, and I enjoy being here. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I'm excited because you posted a lot of stuff about music. So I know I have complete confidence it's going to be a good interview. Well, first of all, let's talk about the band. So you chose a band called Von Ray, and I think it's kind of cool. So tell me the evolution and let's have a little conversation about their actual band name.
Sure. No, happy to do so. The band name itself, the lead singer of the band, his name is Von Ray. And they spelt the band name a little bit differently, and they spelt it V-O-N-R-A. For Von Ray. And then when they got signed by the record label, they made them change it.
When you say Von Ray, you're saying it as two words, correct?
It was two words up until the record label.
Yep. And then what did they change it to?
And then they changed it to V-O-N-R-A-Y.
As one word, right?
As one word, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And I know I had said, why didn't they just stay true to who they were? And I love what you said after.
Yeah, no, record labels make you do things that sometimes you might not want to do, but they do things for the what they feel would be better for the public. So they felt like the public would really understand one word, Von Ray, all V-O-N-R-A-Y, as something that would be easier for them to look up, easier for them to find in a store, easier for them to these days find on Spotify and so forth.
Yeah. How old is this band?
The band is quite a bit. They've been around since the early 90s. They were around at the same time as Matchbox 20, Sister Hazel, 7 Mary 3, all other bands from the Central Florida location.
Very cool. Yeah, I was super excited to learn that too, that the band is actually from Orlando. And as you guys know, out in podcast land, I reside here in Florida. So that was kind of a fun fact for me to learn.
Yeah, they're from Central Florida, Orlando. That's where I met them. I was living in Orlando at the time. And I've never had a chance to work with this band. It's probably one that I would have really loved to have worked with. However, there is an opportunity here in the future that something like that might be happening.
Ooh, that's exciting. You'll have to keep me posted. Yeah, keep me posted so I can let Podcast Land know that. Okay, so why don't you dive into the song that you love of theirs and just go right into how you connect to it, what you remember when it comes on the radio, or when you say, hey, I haven't heard Von Ray for a minute. What goes on in your mind?
That's really cool because I have a 13-year-old daughter, and we went on a road trip, and she created a playlist, and without me knowing it, one of the Von Ray songs ended up on the playlist. And it was a song called The Letter, which is a great song. It's not the one I chose for today, but it is a great song. And it has this one part in it where they do almost a chant in the middle of the song. And when that part came on, me and my 13-year-old looked at each other and just started doing that with, you know, instinctively with each other. And it was just,
it was truly fun.
But when the band first started, they put out an independent record first. And a lot of those songs ended up making it onto their record label debut. But they had a song called Just Waking Up, another one called Pow, and another one called Drinker's Hour. And the one I chose for today is Drinker's Hour. However, Just Waking Up and Pow also have, it was too close for me to choose one. So I think they at least deserve an honorable mention.
Fair enough. So when Drinker's Hour comes on, are there words that catch you? You know, are you brought back to, you know, I guess I was going to say like your childhood bedroom, but the 90s wouldn't put you as a child.
No, I'm old. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I don't think you're that old, but I think you're definitely closer to my age, which it would not put me in my childhood bedroom either. So, you know, what are the memories that come up when this song comes on?
Well, it brings me back to that time for sure, right? I mean, I feel like the early 90s, I was probably in my prime. I was going out to see bands play, and I was actively working in the music industry, so I was trying to find other people to work with. And this was a band I found not to work with, like I mentioned, although I would love to. I found them because I just enjoyed their music. I really loved them as a band, and I got to become friendly with them as, you know, people, as friends, and still to this day, we talk, and they're just an amazing group of guys. But when I hear the music, it takes me back to that Central Florida time where, you know, you could be in the crowd watching this band play, and then we'd walk across the street to see Matchbox 20 play, and down the street to see Sister Hazel play. And these are all bands that went on to become big bands in the 90s. So experiencing that and spending time with them and getting to know them before they became famous, you know, going out to eat after the shows and sitting in restaurants and, you know, whether it be eating wings or drinking beer and talking to the guys about their songs and their times and, you know, what happened today on the show, or even the band Von Ray. I remember the bass player got a new bass guitar, and it was a 5-string bass guitar, and he had never played a 5-string before, and he needed help before the show to set it up and get it ready. Oh. And I was there and I helped him do it. And, you know, it was just fun. It was a good time. So that's what I think of when I hear these songs. Drinker's Hour takes it to a whole different level. But yeah, that's what I think of when I hear Pow and Just Waking Up.
Is there someone specific that you would go to these venues with to see the shows?
Oh, absolutely. As much as I would always be happy to do it by myself if I had to. But I had a couple friends that I would go, whether it be people I worked with at the time that I would drag along with me, or they drag me to other places. So we'd introduce each other to different bands and different types of music. I do remember the girl I was seeing at the time that we would go. And I mean, we would go as far back to see these bands play at these bars when nobody was in the audience, to the point where we would not leave, because we'd stay there all night because we just didn't want to hurt their feelings or have an empty room. So
that's,
I mean,
nice.
Yeah, it goes back that far.
Now, there's a music sector, or whatever you want to say, in Orlando now, and it's called the Milk District. Was that the same thing in the early 90s, or is that something that must have evolved since your time?
It's evolved, yeah. It was Orange Ave at the time was the central location for the music venues. And that was anything from like Sapphire Supper Club to Scruffy Murphy's. I mean, these were venue style bars. So although they were a bar, they had a stage, a proper stage set up, and record labels would come and see these bands play. So wasn't, you know, like a hole in the wall bar, but they were bars. I mean, on any other night, it would be a traditional bar. And then down the road was the Hard Rock and the House of Blues. And those were very large venues. And Von Ray was selling the venues out before they ever got the record deal. There'd be lines around the corner to see these guys play.
So you guys like kind of found them before, I mean, they were a big deal before they were a big deal.
Oh yeah, ground level for sure. And I love it because, yes, I mean, like I said, I've had a chance to work with a lot of great people, but these are people that I just met as a fan. So without working with them, I still enjoyed their music. I still got to spend time with them. I still got to do all that stuff. So it was more as a fan and as a friend than it was as a engineer or producer.
So you're saying producing and mixing, and I assume that's what you're doing now.
Yes, ma'am. I've been working in the entertainment industry, primarily in Nashville, recording country records for 30 plus years now.
Well, that's cool. So had you started the producing music when you were in Orlando? Because you were saying you were looking for new music, not to work with necessarily, but to just enjoy.
Yeah, I started the music career in 87 and moved to New York, you know, I moved around quite a bit, but then ended up in Orlando for 6 years. And that was early to mid 90s. Mm-hmm. And it was, I was too young in my career at that point to work with a band of this caliber. Sure. And then, you know, as I grew up, matter of fact, the band Matchbox 20, they used to go by Tabitha Secret. And before they got their record deal and they had to change their name.
Uh-huh.
So when that happened, they were Tabitha Secret and I used to know them as well. And at one point we were talking to them and they were asking me if I would produce one of their records, their first record.
Uh-huh.
And I said no, because I didn't think I was capable of doing what they needed at the time. And I'm glad I said no, because they got picked up by a record label and put out that first record, which is now one of my favorite records. And I definitely wouldn't have been able to do the same justice at that time.
Yeah, I think that's so important to know that. Sad to know them and not be able to help them, but also know that, like, you know, yeah, you were just too young in your career. And I'm sure now you could do a beautiful job.
Yeah, I wasn't ready then. I wish I had the same opportunity now for sure.
Yeah, well, maybe it sounds like with Von Ray, you might have that opportunity.
Yeah, with Von Ray, they were the first guest on my podcast. And I brought them on and we talked about their record deal and all of the things that they went through at that time. And I'm trying slowly to convince them to go into the studio and let's go ahead and record a few more songs and just see where time has taken us.
It is interesting when I talk to people who are, you know, such a big fan of some group that they've followed for a while. They love, you know, any reunion album, any comeback album. They just love all those, you know, like let's revisit, let's stir up the memories and get some new music recorded. So I love that you're doing that. And I love that it's a group that you've loved so much. Now let's go back to that music area. And were there cover charges for these venues? Did you have to buy tickets? I know you said it was a bar. So set the scene a little bit. What does that look like to just get in?
Sure. No, at the time, even those bars, when bands like Von Ray or Matchbox 20 or any of those would play, there would be a line down the streets. Again, two different styles. They had their acoustic sets that they would play. And like I said, sometimes I'd walk in, it'd be an empty room. And then when there's a full band playing, the line would be down the street and around the corner. So places like the Sapphire Supper Club, which that was the premier venue at that time, it was a beautiful, beautiful bar, beautiful place. Matter of fact, there's a picture, and this came up because of my 13-year-old daughter. My 13-year-old daughter, I don't know if you've heard of this artist, but she's a huge fan of this young lady named Taylor Swift.
I'll have to look her up. So, I don't know.
Yeah, look her up, and she seems to have a lot going on. But Taylor Swift sat in with Von Ray in both of their early days. So Dave, the bass player from Von Ray, who's brothers with Von, Dave Ray. So he sent a picture of him and Taylor Swift standing next to each other on stage at Sapphire Supper Club. So,
oh, man, you just won like way cool points in your daughter's book.
Well, I'm telling you, it's funny to me because you ask what the scene's like. That's what it was like. I mean, when say Von Ray's playing at the Sapphire Supper Club and across the street over at Scruffy Murphy's, you might have the Matchbox 20 playing, and in between their sets, they would just walk across the street and sit in with the other band. So it was things like that that made that time in that area special.
Wow, that is so cool.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I was born and raised in Boston and I worked in New York before moving to Nashville. So I lived and worked in three major music meccas. But when I was in Orlando, for whatever reason, it was probably just the time. But that's the time when things were most exciting. When you got, you know, Rob Thomas walking across the street to sit in with Von Ray, or Von walking across the street to sit in with them, and Taylor Swift stopping by and just singing a song or two with the band. And I mean, it's Taylor Swift at the time when nobody knew who Taylor Swift was. She was just trying to get exposure. So she was just sitting in with bands that had something going on to try to get some of their audience, which she did. I mean, she sat in, and she sounded just as great then as she does now.
Yeah.
I do have a 9-year-old, a 13-year-old, and even my 1-year-old sings Taylor Swift songs. So I guess I am now a true Swiftie.
Yeah. Well, ever since that movie came out, I just did an episode on Taylor Swift
a little bit ago, and I was just saying how the movie came out, and then after the movie, I'm overwhelmingly a hardcore Swiftie now. Like, oh. I avoided it as long as I could, but she has a way of making you fall in love with her.
I know when working in Nashville, when she first got her record deal, and I knew her father and the record label that she was signed to, and mm-hmm. when she started, she had a hard time winning people over in the country music industry. People didn't seem to like her that much. They thought she was fake or too pop, or just what for whatever reason, they didn't seem to welcome her. And mm-hmm. I think that's why she went on to become a pop star instead of a country star. However, she is so talented. You know, whether you like her or not, that doesn't matter. If you should still be able mm-hmm. to respect her talent, because her vocal talents, her songwriting abilities, I mean, everything, she's just spot on.
She really is a total package. The fact that she can songwrite these amazing songs, then she can go out and perform them in all of her fabulous costumes with amazing right. energy and really entertain her crowd. I mean, she is a total package. And she's oh, yeah. really cute. I mean, you know, some guys may think she's hot. Me as a mom, I think she's cute. yeah. But, you know, she's got the beautiful blue eyes and those big red lips and just such a sweetheart. So I don't know. I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan, and just knowing all of the adversity that she's overcome, you know.
Yeah, no, she's great.
Yeah. So when she came in to sing, do you remember any of the songs that she sang? No.
I wouldn't remember any of it if he didn't send me a photo.
Yeah. Maybe we'll use that for the podcast episode. That'd be kind of cool. Okay, so when you guys would go to these venues, you mentioned a couple that were kind of your favorite. Now, I remember that time in life, you know, you're more worried about what you look like than what the temperature is. Like, you don't care if you're too hot or too cold. You know, you're just trying to look good. So do you remember like that kind of feeling when you and your friends would go check out some of these venues? You know, were you dressing up for the ladies, or were you dressing up just to go enjoy some music? What was the vibe? Were you guys pre-gaming? Were you listening to the music before you went to go see them? You know, like, how was it? Like, come on over, we're going to have a couple drinks, then we'll head over to the venue, or what'd you guys do?
Yeah, it's funny. I wasn't always this good looking. No, that time, it was great. It was Orlando, so even right. cold was never cold.
Right.
So, however, there were times when you probably should have had jackets and things like that. And we would go out without them because, you know, we were too cool for that. And we would go to these bars, and yeah, I don't think we'd ever pregame it or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But we would go there, and they knew us. The second you walk in, they knew who you were. And they would, you know, just from being a regular at the bar, not from being a celebrity of any sort.
Correct,
they knew who
yeah.
you were because you're there all the time. And, you know, I would walk in, and this one waitress server at this one bar, she would have a pitcher of beer at the table before I could even make my way to the seat.
Aww.
And so, I mean, it was fun. It was just always fun. And they had a beer garden outside. And, you know, everywhere you went, there was just people hanging out and listening to music. And yeah, at that time, it was just nothing but beer, drinking beer and that. Now I live in Kentucky. Yeah. Everything's bourbon.
Yeah. You've upgraded.
Sure.
So another thing I was going to ask you about was how many members are in the band? And then what was the hangout like? Like, they'd finish their set, they'd come join you at your table. They were like, man, thanks for hanging out, being the only people here. Or
yeah, that would all depend on the venue. So when we were over at, say, Scruffy Murphy's, more of the bar feel, maybe when they were doing acoustic sets and there's nobody in the room. But at that time, their mother was the one selling the merchandise. So I mean, I would sit at the back table with their mother until people would show up. And, you know, eventually people would show up, but it would take, you know, maybe through the whole first set before somebody would actually show up. And it was cool. And to answer your question about band members, I think there was typically five at any one time.
Okay. Were Dave and Vaughn kind of the constant?
Well, yeah, they're brothers, so they really can't get away from each other.
Right.
Although Dave did leave the band for a little while, and he went to play with some other bands. He was the bass player, and he got picked up to go with a couple other bands that were a little further along than Vaughn at the time. So he went on the road with them. And then when he came back and Vaughn was ready to go on the road, he rejoined Vaughn and went back on the road with them.
What an interesting story. This is so cool that you got to discover them, hang out with them, and continue like really a lifelong friendship with them.
Oh, yeah. No, Dave and I talk all the time. I just saw Vaughn. I was down in Orlando for PodFest. And I was able to, the first day of PodFest, Vaughn met me at the hotel and we went across the street to grab some lunch.
How stinking cool is that?
So it was a good time.
Got a podcast? Are you loving it, but not loving how much time post-production takes? Or maybe you just have other tasks calling your name a little bit louder. Virtually You can help. Check out virtuallyuva.com, supporting you in all things podcasting, like editing, show notes, audiograms, and much more. See the link in the show notes. They're waiting to give you back your time. And on that note, let's get back to the show.
Yeah. Well, usually I ask my guests if they, you know, back in the day when we would buy CDs and cassettes, the leaflet that you take out, were you more interested in the words and, you know, being able to sing along? Or I have to imagine, only because of your profession, that you would maybe check out, you know, who produced it, who, you know, was part of the background scene. Or were you taking out the leaflet and really just like listening to the music and absorbing the music and appreciating the pictures? You know, like, what was that like for you back in the day?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because my kids don't get to experience this. And
I know. You know,
I was old enough when LPs were still the thing to have. And in my neighborhood, when I grew up just outside of Boston, all the kids were slightly older than me. So I hung around with the older kids. Mm-hmm. We would listen to records and we would read the liner notes and do all the things that comes with that. But as I grew older, you're 100% right. I would get these records and I would look to say, okay, who produced it? Who engineered it? What studio were they in? Mm-hmm. To me, even my music collection, when I transitioned to iTunes, it has all of the notes it's organized by producer and engineer. It's not organized by band or song or genre. It's just, I want to know who did it. And even on my show, I get to talk to a lot of people. And a lot of famous people, and you mentioned earlier, you know, when you get a band that they like Von Ray, where people like reunions. Well, Von Ray came on the show. We record the show live, and we have an audience participation. And there were hundreds of people watching that show when Von Ray was on. I don't get that type of an audience for any other person anytime, no matter how famous they are. But Von Ray, that fan base is still really that strong. But to tell you a quick story, and I had a recording studio in New York for 10 years before I moved to Nashville. And I was sitting there one day. It was a studio. It was mine. We had it built, and it was very, very nice for what it was. At the time, I thought it was great. As soon as I moved to Nashville, I realized, not so much. But we were sitting there at the table, and there was a Mix magazine, which is an industry standard magazine where you can read about the people who work behind the scenes. Okay. And then there was a Shania Twain CD sitting on the counter next to the magazine. So I was flipping through the magazine, and at the back it had these ads, and one of the ads said, talked about SAE Institute of Technology, which was the audio engineering school.
Okay.
And I turned to the person next to me. I said, I'm going to move to Nashville. I'm going to go work here. And they said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to teach engineering. And they're like, okay, yeah, sure you are. And then we were still sitting there, same meal, eating. And I was holding the Shania Twain CD. And I said, oh, it's produced by Mutt Lange and engineered by Bob Bullock. And then it said, in Nashville. I said, I'm going to go work for Bob Bullock. And they're like, yeah, okay. So I was like, yeah, no, I'm going to do this. And they're like, sure you are. I kid you not, when I say next day, doors on that studio were locked and I was in my car and I drove to Nashville, and it happened that quickly. I mean, I just put a lock on the door in my house, everything. I rented an apartment in Nashville, kept my house in New York, kept the studio in New York, cause I didn't know if any of this would work out.
Yeah.
And I went straight to the school that next day. I mean, I drove 13 and a half hours, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I went to the front desk and I said, I'd like to talk to the director of education. They're like, okay, that elevator there, go up, take a left. So I go to this person's office. And when I walked in, I noticed the person behind the desk, the director, was actually my teacher from the school I went to back in 1989. So he was my engineering teacher. And he said, oh, hey, recognize me. He said, what are you doing here? I said, I want to come teach here. He's like, you can't teach here. I said, why not? He goes, you're not qualified. And I said, but I want to. He says, well, this is what you have to do. I said, well, I'm going to do that. He goes, I know you will. And within 1 year, I met everything he had on that checklist, and I was teaching at that school. And then when I was teaching, he eventually retired, and I went on to take his position as the director of the school. And Bob Bullock came in as a guest speaker. And my students did not want to set up the studio for him when he came in. They just didn't want to do it. It's work or whatever. So I did it. And Bob asked me, he said, who set up the studio? I said, well, I did it. He goes, wow. He goes, you did a great job. I said, well, thank you. He goes, any chance you'd want to come work for me? And I said, yes, sir. And that very next day I was working for Bob. So
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if I believe in any of, you know, those type of things, but both of those things worked in my favor. And I can still remember them like it was yesterday.
Wow. Isn't that cool?
And if it wasn't for Bob, I wouldn't have worked. I mean, he's the reason I worked on all the projects I worked on, all the big country stars and all the stuff. They were all his projects. I was just a piece of his puzzle.
Oh, wow. That's so cool, Jay.
So, yeah, Bob's been on the show now, too. He's come on, he's talked, and a lot of the people that we worked with have come on and talked. And but I owe a lot to that man. Bob Bullock, thank you.
Oh, my gosh. I love that so much for you. That's so cool. Wow. Well, we're winding down. Is there anything more that you want to say about this song or those times that you can remember? I mean, I feel like I can vividly see it because I live in Florida. You know, I can see the streets are wet and the bar lights are on and you're going across or they're going across and you met up with your buddies and you're hanging out in the back till more people get there or whatever during the sets. Like, I love this so much. I just can't even. I love it.
it was awesome. Anything else? Oh, the song itself, Drinker's Hour, just there is a video on YouTube if anybody wants to check it out.
It'll be linked in the full show notes, actually. I always link a YouTube video for each song. So if you guys are looking for the video, you always go to my YouTube playlist. If you're looking just to check out the song, you're going to go to Spotify or Apple, and it's just Memories with a Beat, the playlist. They're always linked in the full show notes. So go and check them out. But what were you going to say, Jay, about the video?
Oh, the video, it's pretty much an acoustic song, and it's Vaughn himself with the acoustic guitar, and I believe he's playing in one of those bars from downtown in Orlando. So it's a very good representation of that time.
Oh.
And the song is called Drinker's Hour, and everybody thinks of it as like a drinking anthem from the days of being at the bar. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's a song about the hardships of alcoholism. And, you know, it's not pro-alcohol. It's actually, you know, hey, watch out for alcohol and what it could possibly do for you. But it was a, you know, a serious thing for him and his family. And so it's a very heartfelt song. And but it gives you that feel of what it was like at that time in Orlando.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely going to go check it out.
It's a great song. I mean, it really is. I'm not just saying it either. I mean, like I said, I was always a fan before anything else.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your podcast. I mean, if you could just tell my audience, you know, because we're talking about music and because you are clearly inundated with music, and I know your podcast is about music, my listeners may find your show very interesting. So could you tell my audience just a little bit the title and what it's about?
Sure.
You know, what you're trying to accomplish?
Sure. It's my name. It's The Jay Franzese Show. J-A-Y-F-R-A-N-Z-E. So the Jay Franzese Show or jayfranzese.com, you can find everything you need to know. But it's a, we call it your backstage pass to the entertainment industry. So what we like to do is share stories. And it all stemmed from my time in the industry working with these people, my family, my friends. They would never care about what I did or my role in the industry. They would always ask, what's it like? What's this person like? Or what's that person like? So that's essentially what this show is we talk to the people who work behind the scenes, and we tell the stories of what it's truly like. Coming up, we have Presley Tennant. She's a young country singer. She was on the TV show The Voice. She's from Southern California. She's developing this new style of music. It's California country. And she's been performing with everybody and their mother. She did this big performance in Vegas. It was a great duet she did with Kelly Clarkson. It's just great. But she told us all the behind the scenes stories about it. She told us how nervous she was and how much of a big deal it was for her at the time. And she even told us all about the backstage stuff behind the scenes at The Voice and what that was like. Kelly Clarkson was actually the judge that turned around for her first. And she joined Kelly's team on The Voice. And so it's cool to hear all those stories and all that stuff, especially for such a young girl. The Voice was seeking her out when she was 13 years old. And you can't join the show unless you're 16.
Okay.
And it was just a great story, great experience. But those are the type of things we do, is we just talk to people and find out what it's really like behind the scenes. A little peek behind the curtain.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know if you guys think that that sounds as interesting as I think that that sounds. I actually have a trip to Tampa today after I'm done recording, and I think that's what I'm listening to. That is the kind of stuff that I think is interesting. That is the kind of stuff that I do want to know about. I want to know about the celebrities, but like, it is interesting, all the things that go on behind the scenes and how we only see a small, tiny fraction of all the work that goes into, you know, the music that we get to love and enjoy.
Oh, it's funny too how everybody knows each other. Because you'll hear a lot of the same names come up in the stories and things like that.
That is so cool. That is so cool that, you know, music, which clearly you love, has brought you on such an amazing journey. And I'm just blown away. I'm impressed. I'm blown away. I'm jealous. I'm very jealous. Well, Jay, it has been seriously so nice to connect with you and get to learn more about you.
It's my pleasure.
And this awesome band, Von Ray.
Oh, they really are awesome.
I got to go check them out.
They really are. And I'm not just saying that. They are by far one of my favorites. I got 5 or 6 of their albums right here in front of me. They're just fantastic.
Well, I have to imagine that their music has to be somewhat similar to Matchbox 20, Sister Hazel, all those ones that you were listening, because same time.
Oh, yeah. Same time, same area, same everything. The difference between them is subtle.
Yeah.
All of them. I would say out of those bands that they're more similar to a Matchbox 20 than any other. They went on the road with Creed. They were opening for Creed, and they were opening up for Nickelback for a while. But
oh, my gosh.
The record label wanted them to sound more like Creed. They actually gave them the same producer, so they would sound like that. But that's really not what Von Ray was about. Von Ray was an acoustic rock band. They were very powerful and very, you know, they were big, but they were more like a Matchbox 20. But the thing that I like about both of those bands is each singer, Von and Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20, they both have extremely unique voices. I mean, extremely unique. You can hear their voice and you're like, I know who that is. There's no mistake in it, and both of them are like that. So if you do go check out Drinker's Hour and watch that video and all
that. Oh, I'm gonna.
Those songs, I mean, you can hear that voice. You can hear the passion and the rawness, but the fullness in this, there's a vocal quality that you just don't get from anybody else. Same thing with Rob Thomas. I mean, his vocals are just amazing.
Wow. Well, I'm very excited. I hope you guys out in podcast land are equally as excited. Jay, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you sharing all your memories and all your stories with us here on Memories with a Beat.
Oh, it is my pleasure. And I wish you all the success with this because it is a great show. It's great, great stories. I love it. And if you ever would like to have me back, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Okay, that's a done deal. So you guys look forward to the next episode with Jay.
That means you get to come
and otherwise, podcast land.
Just throwing that out.
Oh,
there.
Okay. Oh,
we have to play fair.
Oh, okay. Yes, I am in. I would be more than happy to. Podcast land. I hope that this episode sticks with you like the memories to your favorite song.
podcast land, thank you so much for listening. If you had a few memories of your own pop up with this episode, make sure to take a screenshot, tag me on social, Tiffany Mason, or virtually you, and share those memories. I know y'all are listening, and I'd love to hear the memories you were reminded of with this song. Also, would you do me a favor and share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it? This is the best way you can help me to grow my audience. Can't wait to dive into my next guest's Memories with a Beat. Hit subscribe now. You don't want to miss the next episode.